Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a really monumental piece of American literature, Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave, written by himself, published back in 1845.
And it's just impossible to overstate its impact. We're talking about Frederick Douglass, born Frederick Bailey around 1818, who escaped slavery and became, well, a towering figure, abolitionist, orator, writer, statesman.
A true source of nature.
Absolutely. And this book, this narrative, it wasn't just a book, it was foundational.
What strikes me immediately, and you mentioned this before we started, is the timing. 1845. He'd only been free for 7 years.
Exactly. 7 years. And he doesn't hide. He names names, places, dates. He puts himself right out there.
Which, considering the Fugitive Slave Act was looming and active in various forms, was incredibly dangerous. He could have been recaptured.
Oh, easily. He was putting everything on the line. Anyone, anywhere was legally obligated to return him. Publishing this was like painting a target on his chest.
So why? Why do it? Why risk that hard-won freedom?
Because the narrative itself was the weapon. The prevailing myth in the North, or at least the comfortable excuse, was this idea of slavery as sort of a paternalistic system. Myth-guided, maybe, but not inherently monstrous.
Right, that enslaved people were somehow cared for, even content.
Douglass's book just shattered that. It was a first-hand, undeniable account. It showed slavery for what it was, a brutal machine designed to break bodies and souls. And crucially, it proved that a black man could articulate the horrors and the philosophical bankruptcy of the system with immense power and intellect.
It completely undermined the justification for slavery.
It did. It exposed the physical violence, the psychological torture, and importantly, how the system corrupted everyone, the enslaved and the enslaver.
Okay, let's trace that journey he lays out. It starts, as you said, in darkness, Tuckahoe, Maryland. And right away, the first injustice is profound, not even knowing his own birthday.
Yeah, around 1818 is the best guess. And he points out this wasn't accidental. It was part of the deliberate dehumanization, severing ties to identity, to history, to family.
Speaking of family, the separation from his mother, Harriet Bailey, almost immediately after birth.
Standard practice. Again, breaking those natural human bonds. He barely knew her. He mentions these incredibly poignant memories of her walking 12 miles at night after her own work, just to see him for a fleeting moment before having to rush back.
Just devastating. And then comes that formative trauma he describes witnessing his Aunt Hester being brutally whipped by Captain Anthony.
He calls it his blood-stained gate, the moment he truly understood the hell he was born into, the sheer arbitrary cruelty and absolute power wielded over human beings.
It's visceral.
Yeah.
And he connects this suffering to something many Northerners might have misunderstood. The spirituals.
Right. People heard the singing and thought, oh, they must be happy. Douglass says, no, you don't understand. Those weren't songs of joy. They were cries of sorrow, deep anguish. Prayers to God for deliverance, he called them. A testament against slavery, hidden in melody.
Wow. So that's the foundation. Utter darkness. But then a shift happens. He gets sent to Baltimore. He's about 8.
Around that age, yes. To live with Hugh and Sophia Auld, and initially there's a flicker of something different.
Sophia Auld starts teaching him the alphabet, an act of kindness.
A genuine human connection, it seems, but it doesn't last.
Hugh Auld finds out, and he's furious.
Absolutely furious, and this is such a critical moment in the book, maybe the critical moment for Douglass's understanding. Hugh Auld forbids Sophia from teaching him anymore. He declares that learning would, quote, spoil him. It would make him unfit to be a slave.
He literally spells out the strategy.
He does. Douglass says it was like a revelation. In that moment, hearing his master articulate the fear of an educated slave, Douglass understood everything.
What exactly did he understand?
He realized that ignorance was the linchpin of the entire system. If learning made him unfit for slavery, then learning must be the pathway to freedom. The master himself had shown him the key.
That's incredible. An accidental gift born of anger.
Precisely. And it lit a fire in him. Literacy became his obsession, his form of resistance.
So, denied formal lessons, he has to get creative.
Incredibly creative. He talks about trading pieces of bread with poor white boys in the neighborhood, bribing them for reading lessons.
It was artful.
Very. Studying letters marked on timber in the shipyard, practicing writing with chalk on walls and fences. He literally stole his education, piece by painstaking piece.
But acquiring that knowledge wasn't easy. It came with his own kind of pain, didn't it? Especially when he gets his hands on a book called The Columbian Orator.
Yes, that book was a double-edged sword. It was a collection of speeches, dialogues, arguments about liberty, natural rights, revolutions.
Powerful stuff.
Hugely powerful. It gave him the language and the intellectual framework to understand his own desire for freedom, but it also plunged him into despair.
How so?
Well, he says it gave him this clear, sharp view of his wretched condition, but without showing him how to escape it. He understood why he should be free, the injustice of it all, but he was still trapped. He called the knowledge a curse rather than a blessing at that point.
That makes sense. The awareness became torment. This intellectual awakening then sets the stage for a brutal physical and spiritual test. He's sent back to the Eastern Shore to Edward Covey.
Ah, Covey, the slave breaker. His specific job was to crush the spirits of slaves deemed troublesome or too independent. Relentless work, psychological terror, constant surveillance.
Designed to break him down completely.
And Douglas says for a time, it almost worked. He felt himself becoming dehumanized, like a brute beast. This was the absolute lowest point, the nadir.
Then comes the fight.
Yes, the famous confrontation. Covey tries to whip him, and Douglas, at this point utterly desperate, fights back. It's not planned, it's pure survival instinct, but he resists.
So how long?
He describes it as a 2-hour struggle, a desperate, drawn-out battle where Douglas simply refused to be beaten down.
And he essentially wins, right? Covey is fought off.
He is. Covey is, in a way, defeated and perhaps too embarrassed to admit he couldn't subdue this young man. He never whips Douglas again.
And Douglas marks this as the turning point, not just in his treatment, but inside himself.
Absolutely. He writes, "This battle with Hister Covey was the turning point in my career as a slave. I revived within me a sense of my own manhood." He says it rekindled the embers of freedom within him. A slave had been made a man again.
The spirit resurrected, even if the body was still enslaved.
Exactly. And from that point on, the determination to be physically free solidified.
Which leads eventually, after a failed attempt, he mentions, to his successful escape in 1838.
That's right. To New York first, then settling in New Bedford, Massachusetts, he marries Anna Murray, a free black woman who was instrumental in helping him escape.
And the narrative culminates, really, with the event that launched his public life, that speech in Nantucket.
Yeah, 1841, an anti-slavery convention. He's hesitant, nervous, but he gets up and speaks. He just tells his story.
And it electrifies the audience?
Completely. William Lloyd Garrison, the famous abolitionist, hears him and immediately recognizes the power of his testimony. He hires Douglas on the spot as a lecturer. And that's it. His life's work begins. From fugitive slave to abolitionist firebrand.
An incredible trajectory. Okay, let's step back from the chronology and try to unpack the core philosophy here. What are the fundamental ideas or values that Douglas develops through these experiences?
Well, first and foremost, I think, is this unwavering belief in self-reliance and human dignity.
Stemming from moments like the Covey fight.
Definitely. The idea that dignity isn't something bestowed by a master. It's inherent and must be asserted, defended. For Douglas, resistance wasn't just practical. It was a moral imperative. It was the act of reclaiming one's own humanity.
Makes sense. What else?
A very powerful critique of the corrupting nature of absolute power. He uses Sophia Auld as the prime example.
Right. You mentioned her transformation. Kind woman turned tyrant.
Exactly. He saw firsthand how the power of slaveholding itself, that absolute control over another person, poisoned her character. It warped her. His point is that the institution is inherently toxic. It damages the enslaver's morality just as surely as it damages the enslaved person's body and spirit.
That's a profound psychological insight.
It really is. Then there's his sharp critique of hypocritical Christianity. He's very careful here.
How so?
He distinguishes between what he calls the pure, peaceable, and impartial Christianity of Christ and the slaveholding religion practiced by the masters.
The kind that allows praying on Sunday and whipping on Monday.
Precisely. He saw their religion as a cloak for cruelty, a tool to justify oppression and control slaves, not a source of genuine morality. He skewers that hypocrisy relentlessly.
And finally, what drove him to write to speak, despite the danger?
I think it boils down to this powerful motivation to bear witness. He felt an immense duty, a duty to tell the truth, the unvarnished, ugly truth, for the millions still enslaved and silenced. He needed to shock the conscience of the nation, particularly the complacent North. His words were his weapon against forgetting and denial.
Okay, so within that life journey and those core ideas, can we zero in on, say, three pivotal turning points, moments that fundamentally rewired who he was.
Definitely. I think the first, as we discussed, has to be Hérold's accidental revelation.
When he forbade the reading lessons.
Yes, because it wasn't just the act of stopping the lessons, it was the reason given. It will make him unfit to be a slave. That phrase unlocked the secret. Knowledge equals power. Ignorance equals control. It gave him the strategic map to freedom. An unintentional gift.
A paradigm shift in his thinking.
Totally. Yeah. Second, without question, is the fight with Covey. That two-hour struggle.
Why was that more than just self-defense?
Because it was a spiritual and psychological turning point. It was the moment he refused to be broken. He reclaimed his manhood, his sense of self-worth. He proved, to himself above all, that his spirit could not be enslaved, even if his body was. It transformed him from a despairing brute back into a man determined to be free. A slave was made a man.
A moment of resurrection, as you say.
Exactly. And the third, I'd argue, is launching his public voice at Nantucket.
The 1841 speech.
Yes, because that's the moment his personal struggle becomes a public mission. He transitions from seeking individual freedom and safety to becoming a leader in a national movement. He realizes his story, his voice, has immense power to change minds and fight the system. It weaponized his experience.
From personal trauma to public advocacy.
Precisely. He steps into his destiny there.
So, thinking about all this, what are the broader human lessons here? How does Douglass's life speak to us today, beyond the specifics of slavery?
Well, one powerful connection is this idea of the ultimate self-made man. I mean, think about it. He started literally as property, with nothing. No name, no birth date, no family connection. No education.
And he forged everything himself.
Everything. He educated his own mind, liberated his own body, built his own identity, and became one of the most influential figures of his century. It's an incredible testament to human resilience and the idea that your circumstances don't have to define your destiny.
That resonates strongly. What else?
There's a huge lesson about the power of narrative. Douglass understood instinctively, and then strategically, that telling your authentic story is perhaps the most potent tool for social change.
More powerful than just facts and figures.
Often, yes. Facts inform, but stories connect. He showed that to change entrenched systems, you have to reach people's hearts and consciences first. That's a lesson for any leader or reformer today. Your narrative matters.
And reflecting on the system itself, you mentioned the anecdote about his grandmother earlier. Mm-hmm. That really underscores the sheer inhumanity.
It does. It's just heartbreaking and chilling. After a lifetime of devoted service, raising her master's children, raising their children when she becomes too old to work, she's not cared for, she's not retired, she's essentially abandoned.
Sent to a hut in the woods to die alone.
Yeah. It exposes the absolute lie of paternalism. It wasn't just about the whip, it was about the cold, calculated disposability of human beings once they ceased to be profitable. That, for Douglass, revealed the true, soul-crushing nature of the system. It lacked even basic humanity.
It forces you to see the system not just as violent, but as fundamentally devoid of human value. So, tying it all together, what does this suggest? That confronting oppression requires more than just physical resistance.
Absolutely. Douglass's life shows that the fight is deeply ideological. You have to understand the language, the arguments, the justifications of the oppressor to effectively dismantle them. Intellectual mastery is crucial for liberation.
Okay, let's try to distill this incredible story into three final takeaways for our listeners. First, maybe an emotional insight. What's the core feeling or emotional truth that comes through?
I think it has to be the profound, aching sense of loss from the systematic severing of family bonds. That image of his mother, a fleeting visitor in the night. It captures the deep personal wound of slavery, the denial of the most basic human need for connection and love. It fuels his entire fight.
Okay. Second, an intellectual insight. The biggest mental breakthrough.
Without a doubt. Knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave. That revelation, courtesy of Hérold, is central. Literacy wasn't just about reading, it was about consciousness, understanding the system and finding the path out. The deliberate denial of education was the control mechanism.
So the pursuit of knowledge is the pursuit of freedom.
Fundamentally, yes. And finally, a universal insight, something applicable to everyone.
I think it's that resistance is self-reclamation. The fight with Covey wasn't just about avoiding a beating. It was about asserting inherent dignity. It teaches us that even in the face of overwhelming power, refusing to be broken, asserting your worth, is a victory in itself. It's the universal human spirit refusing to be extinguished.
Well said. Dignity is non-negotiable.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.